There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Okay, here we go. Hour number two of Midday Mobile on this Friday. Glad to have you along. Live local talk over the hour. We'll get into that that story. It's a story about some research done. Not even really research. It really is nothing. It's a survey. They looked at how the U.S. economy has fared since 1950, and who was in power, Democrat or Republican. I thought it was interesting, so we'll break that down in just a second. A man who I think would probably be interested in that discussion. He's interested in so much, and he is Angelo at Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry. Hey, man.
Hey, man. How you doing today?
I'm good. Let's talk about what's going on at the shop. Weekend is here, and we've talked about a bunch of things. I do want to talk about all the different gift ideas and stuff going on at the shop, but where are we with precious metals right now?
They've actually picked up a little bit over the last few days. Gold is now over $1,900 an ounce again. Silver is hovering right around $25 an ounce. So we've had a lot of people see that movement and say, man, I better get moving myself and do something. And it's been pretty busy here at the shop.
Okay. What do you tell, I mean, when people come in and they're, because you're, you know, y'all are buying precious metals, you're selling precious metals, and people are maybe hitting certain points where they're cashing in from previous purchases, but they want to move their money somewhere else. I mean, it's kind of a, if you, until you hear what Angelo's fixing to tell y'all, you go, well, it's a fool's errand to sell out at a certain price for precious metal, because then you're putting it in fiat currency, and then what are you going to do with that?
And that's the biggest challenge a lot of people have, is they start looking into this and doing their own research and realize it's a conundrum. Because, like you said, you sell your precious metals, then you've got a bunch of paper, and the whole point of this was not to have paper.
Right.
And that's why we talked to folks. It's like, okay, you've got gold and silver bullion, and you're ready to cash out, or maybe you're not ready quite yet, but you're thinking about it. But when you go to cash those things out, then let's look at some rare and collectible coins that have held their value and been very stable for quite some time, and basically just park your money in those rare collectible coins, set it there for a while until maybe gold and silver prices drop down again, and you say, okay, now I want to get back into precious metals. You sell those rare coins, you buy those precious metals at that lower point again, and you start this whole cycle all over again.
All right. See, you get education, not just a place to sell and buy precious metals and all kind of gifts. And if people want to check out some of the great gift ideas, too, we're going to talk about how to find you in the real world, but also online. Y'all got that stuff up for us to check out.
We certainly do. You can go to our website, mobilebaycoins.com, and we have been active on eBay for many, many years. That's now linked to our page. So you click on that shopping button, click one more time, and it's going to get you to our eBay store. If you don't have time to look at the shop in person, you can also check things out on Instagram and on Facebook. And of course, if you do want to find us in the real world, we're in Midtown, 2204 Government Street. And of course, online, mobilebaycoins.com.
Very good. Angelo, take care.
You too. Have a good weekend, Sean.
All right, you too. Angelo checking in from Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry. And of course, you check out the radio show Tuesday nights at 6, Two Guys and Some Change, which precious metals, but also different collectibles. It's fascinating what those guys know. It's just, I'll be riding down the road just going, well, I didn't know that. We're getting a lot of questions here. People are asking me about Goat Island. Goat Island, it's, you know Goat Island, right? So if you're, okay, if you're at the battleship, say you come out and we're doing one of our live broadcasts from the fantail of the USS Alabama, and you look out to the, that would be the south-southeast, I guess. You look down, you'd see that island out there, that small island. That's Goat Island. There's actually a cool kind of history. We'll, Maybe do that next week on the show. We'll talk about some of this. But that's Goat Island. Or if you're coming across the causeway, you look, or the bayway, you're looking south down there, that island out on the Tensaw Bar, which the Tensaw Bar is a... I'm digging my own hole here. So there's a area, like in the wintertime, if y'all are coming down, you see those exposed areas of dirt south of the bayway and causeway. Those are bars down there. Not... They don't serve any booze, but they're accumulations of silt. And Goat Island's on top of the Tensaw Bar there. So that one. So that's Goat Island. It is not actively for sale. I just had that story about these ultra-rich buying up these islands around the world and these brokerages. And I just said around here, two that would be in play. I don't know who... So the Battleship Commission, if I think I'm correct here, owns Goat Island, which is kind of a interesting thing. And... I don't know if they would ever make that for sale. And Gilliard Island, I bet you, is a Corps of Engineers. I bet you. I don't know that for a fact, and no fact there, but I'm, because it's a spoil and a dredging thing. There'll be somebody in this audience, which I love, that the FM Talk 106.5 audience is like Google. But who owns Gilliard Island down there? I don't know. I don't know if you would get the prices for Gilliard Island you would for others because of the Pelican stuff down there, but It's got to be the Corps or something with the maybe the port or something like that that owns it. All right, let's get into this this study about the political parties and the U.S. economy. So it was, now I will point out that it was analyst at Wallet Hub, who hates Mobile. they still, by the way, remember we took them to account and they had it was, I think, when Bear Stimson was running for mayor, he invited one of the writers. No, that was Business Insider. And they came down here to hang out with us, and we took them on an airboat tour of the Delta and took them all around different restaurants, and they were like, oh, this really is a cool place to live. And we said, yep, that's what we're talking about. But Wallet Hub often does the, you know, key metrics, top 50 cities in the Southeast or whatever, and they'll dog out Mobile. Well, in this case, I'll listen to it because there's not a lot of opinion here. They're just looking at the economy and looking at what party was in power. So Wallet Hub has released their review of how the U.S. economy has fared since 1950 under both parties, looking at times where one side controls the White House and Congress and times when the government was split. Analysts find the best scenario for the economy emerges when a Democrat is the president, but Republicans have control of Congress. But again, we can go a little deeper here. So the study looks at several key factors, including, and see, I think this is going to be lost in the fact that that's how it used to work. I think in today's world, it's not going to work like that anymore because of Nancy Pelosi trying to have a presser talking about invoking the 25th. So the study looks at several key factors, including the state of the stock market, unemployment, national debt, home and gas prices, even the level of income equality across the United States. We'll get to that in a second. That one's great. Researchers also examined how each administration since Dwight D. Eisenhower has affected the nation's fortunes. The study finds a divided government actually produces the best results. Analysts say each party has its strengths and weaknesses when it comes to handling the economy. In fact, the only two measures rank better for America is when both branches are under Democratic rule. So number one is split. Number two is Democratic rule. But that's overall. Now, look in the breakdown, though. Find out what's important to you. It said, for Democrat presidents, the report reveals they tend to have better results when it comes to raising home values, increasing health care coverage, imagine that, raising wages, and boosting the performance of the S&P. For Republican presidents, they historically do a better job at winning the international trade battle, ding, lowering the country's gas prices, ding. You see a theme going here? GOP presidents also succeeded at fixing a topic which is a usual talking point of the Democrat Party. This is the one that stood out to me in this study. What did we hear, whether it's from candidate Biden, it's Senator Harris, income inequality. Democrats are right. Nancy Pelosi, they're going to fix this income inequality. They're now working, by the way, the White House has come up on what they agree for spending for a CARES Act 2 thing here, coming up, I think, $1.5 trillion today. Larry Kudlow said something in an interview earlier about that, so maybe something gets done before November 3rd. I don't know. But they're talking about income inequality, right? Democrats are always talking about those Republicans, and they don't care about middle class and poor people in the United States, and which President Trump has proven to not be true. And if you look over time, Republicans help level out income equality more than Democrats. Said in Congress, researchers find it's more of a toss-up on certain issues. Both parties get mixed results on lowering unemployment, improving health insurance, relieving consumer debt, and raising property values. A Republican legislature was found to be better for lowering the national debt. That's old news. Maybe not anymore. Second on the list of what a Republican legislature is good at doing, decreasing the poverty rate. Mind you, this is not coming from some conservative think tank. This is Wallet Hub. Okay, and so they're breaking down the numbers as who's in the White House, who controls the House, who controls the Senate. They're going from that. And on two metrics here, leveling out income inequality, Republican presidents do better than Democrat presidents. Yeah, this is the kind of stuff that we should be discussing at the debates. Republican presidents do more to level out income equality. And in Congress, a Republican legislature is better for lowering the national debt. Just again, that's, I got a beef with that. But Republican legislatures decrease the poverty rate. And they also improve, which I know it's hand in glove here, wage growth. So how is it when this is the truth over time, that the branding, which the Republicans, I think you could say, that they have failed to do a good job of branding here, that it is a Republican president that helps equal out income inequality, and it is a Republican legislature that helps with lowering the poverty rate and increasing wages. This is what, I mean, there it is, right? I mean, that takes out, other than the President Trump's crazy and has COVID discussion, that levels that out. The stats show that if you want to level out income inequality, this is that, you know, rising tide floats all boats kind of thing. It's true. It's true over time. Republican legislatures decrease poverty rate, increase wage growth. Said over nearly 70 years, 12 men have occupied the Oval Office. While the study doesn't crown any winners and losers, it does show which commander-in-chief oversaw losses and gains for American people. Said when looking at the stock market, Republican Dwight D. Eisenhower sits on top. Now, side note here, there's other reasons why Eisenhower was in office, but there were other things going on. Said Ike saw the country get nearly a 16% annual return from the S&P during his presidency. This just edges out President Clinton's 8 years in office, where the S&P was up by 15.46%. It also turns out Eisenhower oversaw the largest drop in the national debt. Can we get some of that genetics extracted and bring him back to life or something? We need the help. Overall, GDP rose most under Lyndon B. Johnson. So LBJ, the GDP rose most at 5.1%, and unemployment fell under fellow party member Bill Clinton at 0.44%. So he said, if you're asking how the current administration's doing, President Trump's performance compares very favorably to the last few Oval Office holders. In comparison to his predecessor, Barack Obama, the Trump administration has seen a higher return from the S&P 500, more economic growth, and added less debt to the country's GDP, 0.51%. Now, that's a surprising one, because with everything going on right now, you'd think it would be higher, but actually less debt. The final number is a major change from Barack Obama's time in office. During those 8 years, the national debt grew by 4.55% in relation to GDP, the highest increase of any White House in the study. So just some notes there when it comes time to vote, that it may not be exactly like you think it is. Who does best for wage equality? Who does best for getting people out of poverty? Who does best for equaling out the income gap? According to the folks at Wallet Hub, studying presidents and bicameral bodies over the years, Republicans do that. Coming right back. Grab your calls.
Is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
It's at 124 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Does see that Paul was holding and he's gone? My man, Paul. Dang it. Paul. People holding on that want to agree. I want to... The civil discourse that Paul and I have bounced around over the years, because I'm sure he... I was just reading a Wallet Hub study, but I think it's interesting. It's interesting. It's a talking point. I think it's a fail on the Republicans' part that they have not done a better job of marketing that. That you want to see reduction in income inequality? You want to see a lower poverty rate? Well, then here's how you do it. By the way, too, Josh. So, Josh, that was what in my notes. I can take a picture of it and send it to you. Josh on the text line said, is that dead cat from Opelika going to be counted in COVID deaths? Please ask the Mobile County Health Department. Well, Josh, I got another question. My leadoff was, why are they testing a dead cat for COVID? Is that... I mean, there may be... I don't want to say that there's no answer, because there may be a full story that said, well, there's this reason that was... you know, Fluffy McFancy Pants, the show cat, and they, I don't know. But I do question why you're testing. Like, when it was remember early on, they had some tiger up at the zoo or something had COVID. Was that like in New York or something? Probably because they had taken that tiger to the nursing home. But the... The tiger's one thing, a big, expensive, you know, animal for a zoo and a big deal. They're probably going to do an autopsy, try to figure that out. But if this is just like, I'm just not anti-cat here, not anti-cat, it's just a thing. You find a dead cat. Do you go, hey, we need to get, y'all get a COVID test over here. We need that stat. Who tests dead cats for COVID? Leaves me with a lot of questions on that one. All right, and oh yeah, and the can we get the we may get the fire story here in just a second. I'm going to talk a little bit about this fire story in the New York Times. Finally, the New York Times has come around to stuff we've talked about on the show over and over. My buddy Bill Finch and I have talked about it. He talks about it on his show. We see it around here with controlled burns, right? When the woods are purposely set on fire, you know, for good. New York Times, I think, is going to give cover for California if they start doing this, to make it not Trump's idea, to make it something else. We'll get to that in a second. Also, I saw the overnights were in. I guess they're the two overnights, because 2 days later for the vice presidential debate, the vice debate. According to the folks at Nielsen that do that kind of ranking, said nearly 58 million people watched Wednesday's debate between Pence and Harris, making it the second most watched VP debate in history. Who do you think the record is? Dalton, you got an idea? Did you run the story? The second. So number two right now is what happened the other night. Number two is Pence-Harris, the second most watched VP debate in history. Number one, anybody? Anyone? Anyone? Dalton's coming in. You know it, don't you? You know it. You know it. I had look on your face. There you go.
I have a pretty good feeling.
And it is?
Sarah Palin.
Yep.
The Sarah Palin debate.
That's right.
And was that?
Lipstick on a pig.
Was that Biden? She was
Biden.
That was against Biden.
It was Biden.
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right.
Right. So number one was Sarah Palin and Joe Biden in 2008. And now the number two most watched, it's Harris and Pence.
And I remember watching that Sarah Palin debate. I think I took
you were
a trip.
7 years old?
I was 16 years old, or maybe 17, and acted like a 7 year old.
Right.
But had actually traveled up to Knoxville for a look around campus to see if I would be going to the
college campus tour
of Tennessee, Knoxville. And instead of going out and, you know, partying or checking out the frats,
you went and watched the, no wonder you're so smart.
The VP debate with Palin and Biden. Yes.
No wonder you're so smart. You were doing that back then. Goofballs like us were.
Oh, well, watching. I wasn't invited to any parties.
Right.
Played,
there's that.
Played the part in it, but yeah.
There's that. So, yeah, so number one is, you know, the old Sarah Palin, Joe Biden in 2008, but a pretty close second. the other night with the fly, you know?
I wouldn't have guessed that. I would not have thought that this year's vice presidential debate would do numbers.
I was it people trying to soothe themselves after the presidential debate? They all ran to the VP debate?
That must have been what it was.
The vice debate.
More likely, I think a lot more people interested to see how Kamala Harris would do in her first big-time debate, other than the Democratic...
It's not bad numbers, man. 53 million.
No, not at all.
Not bad numbers. Sorry, 58 million.
And I think a lot of these numbers that we see now, whether it's sporting events or events like the debates, they're losing a lot of the data because so many people are streaming now. And those don't count towards a lot of the at least initial numbers. I think there are a lot more people checking these things out than even we think.
So you think that number might be higher?
I do. Yeah, I think it is.
All right. Coming right back, more of Midday Mobile right here on FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 135 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile on this Friday. Glad to have you here. And let me just set this up. And my man Dalton is right across from me now. It's like the Friday's old. We're gonna this fall bring him back some. I think we have to have 6.5 stories return at some level this fall. Okay.
Well, we're on a break.
Okay. Right but now. When we come back. It's going to be
like we'll have a new season.
Okay, new season of 6.5 stories. All right, coming to your airways very soon. Let me just set something up for next week, and because maybe this story gets picked up, maybe it doesn't over the weekend. But it's a New York Times story by Joe Cowan, and it says, "Alarmed by the scope of wildfires, officials turn to Native American traditions." All right, so what they're talking about is controlled burns here. And this is something we talk about a bunch. Bill Finch and I have talked about it on this show and on his show. We talk about it when they put on these controlled burns around here for what happens, you know, putting fire to the woods specifically, you know, purposely within a controlled situation to prevent there being an amount of fuel to start a big raging wildfire.
Yeah, it sounds like the opposite of what you should do.
Right.
Set
but it's
fire
actually,
to the woods.
Yes, but it's actually not only keeps the woods safer from a wildfire one day. It also makes them healthier and a bunch of stuff to that. And there was a lot of this went on all over the country until Smokey the Bear shut all this stuff down. And so what I'm getting to, and we'll dig in the story next week, but remember President Trump has talked about California and its management of its forest. And he gets pilloried and what does he know? And they're, blah, blah, blah. I'm telling you right now, this New York Times story is going to give cover for California to start doing what it should have done before. Now, there's not the same forest out there. You don't manage. You don't do the same prescribed fires you do in the Southeast. It's completely different, timber consort out there, and obviously it's a lot drier. But it's a way you prevent those big ones. You do run smaller controlled fires to reduce the fuel, the stuff that would burn. So when the inevitability of a fire getting started somewhere, it doesn't go and do the horrible damage, the fatalities and the loss of structures and all that that happens in the West. And I just have a feeling because this article, which is cool because it's two things I like, controlled burns and Native American history, but it's talking about how the Native Americans would set the woods on fire. And they did, but also other states and property owners have been doing it for a long time. I think they're trying to give cover for California if they decide to start doing this. It'll be like, oh, that wasn't Trump's idea. That was, we're going back to the Native American roots.
Right.
Which they haven't paid a lot of attention to in California. But that's a next week's story, but it's interesting if you get a chance to look at it on the New York Times. On their website, Joe Cowan, the author of that story. All right, so next week we'll dig into that.
And it seems like, Trump knows just enough about enough things.
Well, he has people talking to him that are smart.
Well, he knows enough about enough things to get in trouble with people.
Yes.
Because he's able to say what the people that truly know what's going on. He's able to kind of put those
yes, he's that person
there.
At the party, right, yes.
But he doesn't know enough to qualm everyone's, and he's never going to make everyone 100% happy. But last year when he said they don't rake the forest, and everyone came out and said he's thought he was literally he meant that to grab a rake and go out. But and he was right in a way, but he knew just enough
to say
something, but not enough to completely say what he meant.
Right. Good point. It's coming because this article in New York Times is there for a reason.
Yeah.
That's all I say. All right. Also, you made a good point. 58 million, Nielsen said, watch that VP debate. But if you take in all the other shorts, it may be a thing with the kids now. My 15-year-old, very engaged in politics, mm-hmm. very interested in debates and all that kind of stuff. So, and she didn't watch it on a TV, watched it on a device.
Well,
you know?
Well, even I cut the cord. I've got YouTube TV now, and they have all the numbers from these different streaming sources. But I think when you see those overnight numbers, those are from TV sets like cable. Everything except streaming, and I think eventually they add the streaming numbers on, but a lot of the numbers we see, like even with the presidential debate, I think they're lower than they actually are because so many people watch the live stream, but then you can't even take into account the people that watch small clips from
sure. Yeah, I don't know how they count or not count. I do know this, that the digital traffic is high with, let me see, I've gotten in the last hour, one, two, just two, but that's weird. Usually I get more emails and texts coming in from political folks that want you to donate money to a campaign.
Yeah, I got one, my most recent one. It's Martha.
Martha.
Which Martha. It's Martha. VP Pence was here yesterday, and we failed to hit our goal. We just need four more Patriots to chip in. Can you help, Dalton? I did not help because I've gotten about a million text messages just like that. Every single day, they keep coming in for me.
You're not the only one. I guarantee you, I imagine most people out there listening to us right now can go refresh their email over the last couple hours, and you've gotten an email, or you go to your phone, you've gotten a text.
Yeah, well, RoboKiller is on the case, and I've talked about the RoboKiller app before, and I used to use it. I've stopped using it since the robocalls got ridiculous there for a time, and for some people, I'm sure they still are, but RoboKiller has found that these campaign text messages from not just the Trump campaign, but also the Biden campaign, they said that the numbers jumped from 350 million political text messages in June to 1 billion in the month of September. Just the 1 month alone, September, there were a billion political text messages sent. And the Trump campaign, I think they said they're trying to send another billion before November 3rd. And, that billion wasn't just from the Trump campaign. If you get one from Biden's side, which I have yet, maybe they saw voting passed or whatever. But
right.
It says...
That'd be troubling if they did. But
Biden-Harris headquarters. Jennifer, this campaign will be won by grassroots support we see over the next 41 days. That's why we wanted to tell you exactly where your contribution could go. And then they list the different tiers of contributions to the Biden campaign.
Which one do you get the Joe Biden coffee mug?
It's $10 to distribute campaign literature.
Okay.
$25 to launch a digital ad.
Uh-huh.
$50 to support a virtual phone bank, or $100 to extend a media buy in a battleground state. So pretty specific there with where the money's going on that side. Meanwhile, I'm getting texts that say, well, five times your donation if you do it in the next hour. And I'm sure it's the same on both sides, but a billion texts sent on behalf of political campaigns.
Well, it didn't surprise me.
And, they said there was a law and is a law where political text messages, they say, that are generated through auto dialing are not legal without your consent. But there's an FCC ruling in June that allows political campaigns to use what's known as peer-to-peer technology to let individual campaign workers text you directly. So if you're wondering why
all the different...
Why Donald Trump Jr. is texting you one moment,
yes,
and then Martha McSally the next moment.
Ivanka's all the time texting me.
Well, I'm jealous. I haven't gotten a single
Ivanka.
She texts
me all the time. They figured me out.
Ivanka hasn't texted me yet, but that's why they have the names on there, because that is allowed. But...
So that's why that's happening.
Yeah, that's exactly why that's happening. And... It's something that I'm tired of.
See, so you make a law. You make a law, like I've said forever. You make a law, and then the market figures out a way around it.
Yeah, they figured their way out around this one, and I think I'm about ready to leave this digital age behind with these texts. They're wearing me out.
I don't think that's happening. All right, coming right back. More of Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5.